I'll do a brief introduction right now. This is an interview for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program dealing with the Youngstown community, the Youngstown Jewish community, and more specifically the Rabbi Sidney Berkowitz. The interviewee is Mr. Henry Bertolini. The interview is taking place in his place of employment at 3700 Mahoning Avenue, Austintown, Ohio. The interviewer is Matthew Butts. The date is July 9th, 1992. Now the time is approximately a quarter after 9. Okay, I'm going to start off with a little bit of some biographical background. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up, where you went to school, things like that?
Well, I was born on the north side of Youngstown. In those days, delivery was not made in the hospital, it was made at home. And I don't recall exactly the location of that home, but then we moved to Crandall Avenue. Lived on Crandall Avenue until I was about 5, at which time my father built this building in which you are now, as a marble showroom and a marble fabricating plant. And he built a home at 3841 Mahoning Avenue. And I moved out here when I was 5 years old. I attended school in its my entirety at Austintown Fitch High School. At that time, all 12 grades were in that building. It's now known as Austintown Middle School. Mm-hmm. And from there, I attended Youngstown State University. At that time, it was Youngstown College for about a year and a half. And that was at the time of World War II. Graduated from high school in 39. And in 41, of course, war broke out. And in 42, I was inducted into the service. In the service, I was a private, went to Fort McClellan. From there, I was made to go to Fort Benning as an officer training school, graduated there in 42 as a second lieutenant, served in the United States in various training camps as an infantry training officer until 44, which time I was sent to the South Pacific. I served in the Philippines. From the Philippines, I went to Japan, served in the Army of Occupation there for about a year, came home in 1945. And entered my father's business because he was by himself at the time and needed assistance. And so I didn't finish my college education. Instead, I went right into the business and worked at that until we closed our doors in 77. 78, I opened up a travel agency in our same building, and we're still here to this date.
What was your father's name?
Father was Emilio Giovanni Bertolini.
Was he an immigrant?
Giovanni is the Italian equivalent of John.
Uh-huh. Was he an immigrant?
Oh, yes, yes. He was a, he had immigrated to the United States from Italy. I'm going to say in about 1910, I surmise that only because my oldest, the firstborn, was born in 1911, and my father was not there for the birth. He had already left. The idea of coming to the United States, find a place to stay, and call for his wife to come. It's unfortunate, though, that at that time, by the time he got here and got situated, World War I broke out. And so they were never able to get together until he was able to bring my mother over in 1920, and I was born in 21.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what town he was from?
Oh, yes. Poseco, Provincia de Bercula in the province of Giulia, which is in the northern part of Italy. It's forms a triangle with Venice and Trieste. If you were to make an almost an equilateral triangle, at the peak of that triangle would be the city of Udine, and we were a little small village. I visited there. In fact, I spent almost a year there when I was 4 years old. The peak of that equilateral triangle is Udine, and just outside of there, a few kilometers outside of there, is a little small village known as Poseco. And that's where both my parents were there, came from there, and as did a lot of Italian immigrants who came to this country and actually ended up working for the Bertolini Brothers Company.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you remember much about Youngstown growing up on Cranwell Avenue?
No, not really. Not really. In those years, no. I have more of a memory, probably because of repeating it, of the year I almost spent in Italy with my grandfather, uh-huh. with my grandparents. I actually spent time with my maternal grandparents because my paternal grandparents had died, and my paternal grandmother had died. My grandfather had remarried, and so he had a second wife, and I knew her. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have pictures of that vacation and everything else. And so, in talking with at home, we relived those memories, and that's why I have a great recall of that instance when I was just 5 years old. Then I had occasion to go back again, and we spent 6 months when I was 13 years old. I was supposed to come back and be in the sixth grade, and I didn't make it back till after Christmas. Still managed to proceed to the next grade, even though with only 6 months of, rather 3 months of schooling. So I don't recall anything on the north side. Here, of course, yes. Because I'd come back, and my parents were perturbed because I was unable to speak American English at the time, because I'd spent a year in Italy, and I could only speak Italian in our dialect, which is known as Furlan. And but as children are, you know, in about 2 or 3 weeks, I picked up enough that I could go to school mm-hmm. when I was supposed to go. I remember more of Austintown Township because we were out here in the sticks. There was hardly anything here except the lumber yard next to us. And we were one of the three homes there, one alongside of each other. Other than that, there wasn't very many homes out here in Wycliffe and in 25.
Uh-huh. Describe for me the growth of Austintown, what you've seen over the years.
Well, what I've seen in Austintown, of course, is that thinking that Mahoning Avenue, at that time when we moved out here, the road between Meridian Road and Raccoon Road was known as Wycliffe Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And in my early youth, it was repaved at that time with brick and was three lanes wide, and that's the way I presume it got its word, its name of Wycliffe Boulevard. And they thought that was going to be quite big because Security Lumber Company was the developer of Austintown. They had a lot of roads put in, platted with concrete roadways, but there wasn't much activity. Why, I don't know. We were at that time a farming community. We were one of the first schools to get out in spring. We would always be out either the third or the fourth week in May. City schools always went into June, the first or second week into June, so we were left out. Presumably, at least we children came to think that it was because we were a farming community and the children had to go home and help their parents with the plowing or whatever they did. and there was a little center at Austintown, Jordan, had an automobile agency up there. We had a Ford agency on Wycliffe Circle, Abe Frank, I can recall that one, and which is now, then became a aluminum extruding plant, and then it became Ohio Chair and so on, but that was the one industry that was here. Lumber yard next to us and Bertolini Brothers out here was probably the only industry out here. Mm-hmm. It homes started to build up along Mahoning Avenue. Very little industrial, even though we, I think, are, I don't know whether we're classified industrial or commercial. And we had a grocery store up there, right across from Abe Frank, which was the Schiavone store, the only grocery store around. And from there on out, well, at that time on Raccoon Road, right at the corner of Raccoon and Mahoning, was an airport known as Jones Airport, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. From there on out to Austintown, there were scarce, the homes were sparsely spaced, hardly any industry until you got out to Austintown, and then there was a couple of automobile dealers out there. Gas station, and of course Fitch High School. Mm-hmm. And although they expected Mahoning Avenue to become a commercial development, it was very slow. Had no idea why, because in your youth you don't worry about those things. You have no idea what, and then it was only after World War II that things started to build. They built Woodside School and built all those little elementary schools, and Washington Plaza, Mahoning Plaza, Kmart came in there. Arts High School started to bought the corner there at Raccoon Road and East made a little plaza. And we started to get out from the city and move out into the suburbs to the detriment of the inner city. That Austintown was never a large residential community either. Mm-hmm. It appeared that people preferred to go to Canfield, Boardman, or Poland. Austintown was considered to be blue collar, mm-hmm. and therefore probably not desirable, and at least for people who were considering building with an idea of their investment increasing in value. So that's about my, that's my opinion too, of course, of the growth of Austintown Township.
Okay. How about, did you have many occasions to visit the city of Youngstown growing up?
Oh, yes.
What was it like growing up?
Oh, really enjoyed Youngstown. Again, if we go back earlier, in my youth when I learned to drive at 16, I used to take my mother downtown on Saturday morning. I would take her to town because she went to town to see a movie. Then she would shop, and I would pick her up at the back of Olds Market. Mm-hmm. At that time, the Olds Market ran from Federal Street all the way back to Boardman Street. It was a big market. And in fact, even had an entrance coming out on Phelps Street. I would pick her up there at about 6 o'clock at night. It was like clockwork every Saturday. That was one of my duties. And of course, I enjoyed it because I would have the car to drive down by myself and then I could go down and pick her up. We would go down to the theater. We being on the west side would go down to the Mahoning Theater. I think that was it. It's down there just beyond Steel Street. You go down by streetcar because the streetcar at that time ended at Meridian Road, where the gas station is now. There used to be a loop. The streetcar made a loop right there at that thing, never came out into Austintown Township. And in the early years, we had a jitney. I remember him very well, but I can't put a name on him. It was a jitney. He was like a... was just an old four-door sedan automobile, but he would pick up people from the streetcar and take them out into Wycliffe. Mm-hmm. In the early years, my mother and I would do that. We'd take the streetcar to go down to Mahoning Theater. We would go down to the theater. It was, you know, the, what do you call it, matinee, 10 cents. You'd see a movie, you'd see a serial, you'd see the newsreel, you'd see the coming attractions, and you always stayed for to see it twice because it didn't push you out the door. And that was one of the Saturday experiences that you grew up with as a child, was movies. A lot of movies, a lot of serials. And then we, as you got older, you went downtown and to the Paramount, to the Warner, to the Keith Albee, to the State Theater, to the old Park Theater. But probably the nicest memories are at Christmas time.
Uh-huh.
It was really a Christmas in the city. You'd go down there, snow would be there, the streets were full of people. The shoppers were jovial. We had a great time. We'd go from, you know, at that time you had Livingston's and Lustig's and McKelvey's and Strauss's, and Grant was downtown, and you had 3 10-cent stores. You had Woolworths and McCrory's and Kresge, and you had Petrakis Restaurant, which if you went down, you almost had to stop and have a sundae there before uh-huh. you came home, because they had excellent ice cream. And so you, it was an experience to go down. And during the Christmas season, you'd probably go down 4 or 5 times.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't just one trip, because it got you into the spirit of Christmas. The shopping, the people working downtown were, they were concerned about you coming in and buying something. They bent over backwards to be nice to you. It was so much different than it is now. And we really enjoyed it. Uh-huh. Really enjoyed it. That's what I remember of downtown Youngstown.
Okay. How did you meet Dr. Berkowitz?
Well, I've been thinking about that, and I think I probably met him because at the time Bertolini Brothers were Marble Tile and Terrazzo contractors, and I met him when we went up to either inquire about some work over there that he wanted done in his restrooms and things. We did some work in the chapel.
Uh-huh.
We did some work around the Ark. I know we did some changing of in his toilets, because I think they have marble toilet partitions up there, ceramic tile floors, and as was the case in a lot of the nicer churches here, you always had ceramic tile restrooms, and you always had marble toilet partitions
uh-huh.
rather than the metal, which came into being right after World War II, and then started to knock marble out of the market because we were too expensive. But as I remember, I think that's how I first met Dr. Berkowitz.
What's a Tefuata Rod of Shalom look like? Could you describe it for me, please?
Well, the chapel itself, I would think, to me, it looks more like a small theater
uh-huh.
because the floor is ramped. It's you start off at the back and come and you go down to the to a lower level to where you would sit, and the seats are not square with the arc, but they are in an arc, and of course you have the, and I don't know what they call it, but I would call it the, let's see, I'm afraid to think of what the, it's a shame when you get older you get some memory blanks, and it's hard to recall the proper word, but the place of worship, I would think, and where they kept their Torah.
Uh-huh.
And on either side of that, of course, is the Ark. I would call it the Ark. And then, of course, you have the Ten Commandments inscribed in the Jewish language, and I don't even know which. Uh-huh. What language that really is called.
Okay.
That's about the only thing I can think about, because other than that, I know they have rooms for classes and like classrooms, something like Christian churches have for Sunday schools and so on.
Uh-huh.
And I think they have an auditorium.
Uh-huh. What was Dr. Berkowitz like?
For me, surprisingly, I expected something different, but I found him to be very outgoing, very personable. Very likable.
Uh-huh.
And I think what made him likable was the fact that he was interested in you and didn't look down on you or demean you because you were of another faith. I was a Catholic, and at those days, before the getting together of the faiths, there were some Catholics that were almost told not to enter a Protestant church, let alone a Jewish temple. But didn't bother me any, and finding him to be accepting someone like me as a Catholic, I thought it quite nice, and we hit it off quickly, and we had no difficulty. I found him to be a fair in business, and because we had to estimate what jobs would do, and he allowed us to do it under those conditions. And of course, when you people do that, then you almost ensure the fact that you're going to do a job that more than meets his approval.
What did he look like? What did Rabbi Berkowitz look like?
Well, asking me that, you must have pictures of him to be able to describe him, but I would say that he was probably medium height. I think he's probably, I'm going to figure that he was about 5'10". He was just a little shorter than I, and combed his hair back quite flat. Other than that, I mean, describe him. I think he had dark hair. And I'm at a loss of words after that.
Other than your initial business contact with Rabbi Berkowitz, what other type of contact did you have with him?
Well, we were in Youngstown Rotary Club together.
Oh, okay.
And that's probably where I had more dealings with him than anywhere else. In the year, in the Rotary Club at that time, we only had three officers.
Uh-huh.
We had a treasurer, a vice president, and a president. And once you became treasurer, it was automatic that you then became next year the vice president and ultimately the president, because it is the board of directors who nominate and select the officers.
Uh-huh.
And so the board selects the treasurer, that when you become vice president, when you become president, you want your vice president to be able to work with you. So the vice president is allowed to select who will become treasurer. And I had selected out of the board of directors when I was vice president, a Major Knickerbocker from the Salvation Army.
Uh-huh.
And he was a big gentleman, probably bigger than I am, quite robust, 200 pounds or so, very jovial, very nice gentleman. And he would appear that he was anxious to do all of these things for me, because when you become president, your vice president is chairman of the Club Service Avenue, which has about 30 committees under it. And he has to be sure that all those committees function right, that they do things that you as a president want to be done. So it's very important that your vice president and you get along quite well. It isn't somebody that you're going to be at odds with. So that's the reason that you're allowed to select out of the board of directors who will be your vice president. Well, it so happened that Major Knickerbocker got a notice from Salvation Army that he was going to be moved. So then it became my duty, and another thing came into being. Rotary International came out with an edict that from now on, Rotary clubs will include in their list of officers a president-elect. A gentleman who, having served as vice president, will then serve 1 year as president-elect, having no functions at all, but just to become better acquainted with the operation of the club, so that during his term as president, he can do a better job. Which is nice, except when you initiate the program, somebody's going to go from nothing right into president-elect, particularly in our instance, because our vice, our treasurer, who was going to be our vice president, all of a sudden was gone. So I had to pick somebody who would be my vice president, turned out to be president-elect. And out of the board of directors, I selected Sidney Berkowitz to be my so-called vice president. Then when the Rotary International said that your vice president will become president-elect, he went then right to president-elect, and I had to pick another gentleman to be my vice president. So in all of those times, you're on the board, 2-3 year terms. We served on the board for quite a few times, and it is in this context that I really got to know Sidney, and I found him to be very nice, because in the Rotary Club, there weren't very many Catholics years ago. And there weren't very many of the Jewish faith either. We did have one president who was of the Jewish faith. That was Sidney Moyer, who had a pants manufacturing plant down on Walnut Street. And Bertolini Brothers had their office in the first floor of the Moyer pants plant back in the early days. This is before we moved out here to Wycliffe. So that tells me that my dad got along with the Jewish people as well as he did with the Catholics, because he was a Catholic, of course, as was my mother. So I think working with and you know, there's a lot of things about racial, but I never found that. It wasn't until later in life that I found somebody had to point out to me that I probably had been discriminated against because I was a Catholic, but in my naiveness, I never realized that until somebody pointed it out to me. It makes you more tolerant, but there wasn't anything to be tolerant with Sidney. He was great. You would never know. He did not make it a point to impress you with anything of the Jewish religion. He was a Rotarian, and we treated him as a Rotarian. I treated him as a Rotarian. I thought he had a great potential to be a good Rotary president. As it turned out to be, he was one of our probably better presidents because of his speaking ability, of his knowledge, of his ability to bring people together. So Sidney became president. He may have became a year or so later, but I selected him to be my vice president. He became my president-elect and therefore served the year following my term. So we that's probably my closest association with him, and it was a great joy. I enjoyed him. I hope he enjoyed me. I don't know.
Uh-huh. What was his personality like?
Oh, as I said, he was easy to work with. I never saw him in anger. When we had things to do, I think probably the other thing that I liked about him was he always had a different point of view.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what I attribute that to whether his upbringing or his faith or his, maybe some of the discriminations that he may have been subjected to. You never knew that from seeing him or knowing him, because he never practiced it. I never saw any evidence of it. And we had a lot of occasion in the 3 or 4 years that we served together on the board of directors. When you meet at least once a month, you had a meeting which you attend once a week, and you have committee meetings, and you have all of these functions, you have all of our little fundraisers that we had. At that time, our major fundraiser was the Youngstown Charity Horse Show. So you have a lot of those little things, and a lot of social events that you went to. And so I think a different point of view, great ability, a great speaker, wonderful enunciation, and personable. I don't know how you couldn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't follow him in his faith, you know, but he came up with some excellent reasons. One of them, of course, that he repeated a couple of times in some programs was, you know, if it wasn't for us Jews, there wouldn't be a Catholic Church.
Uh-huh.
Of course, that is a fact.
Uh-huh.
And that Christ was a Jew. So that made it all the more intertwining.
Uh-huh. Do you have a good sense of humor or anything else?
Oh, I think so. Uh-huh. Yes, I think so. I think so. I think that's one of the reasons, as I say, he came up with a different point of view. Yes, he had a good sense of humor, and I'm thinking of one other thing. There are some Rotarians to this day. One of them is Bill Kostler, Bob Brooks, a couple of other ones, Johnny Funchen. They're all past presidents. But when Sidney Berkowitz, before he was president, was called to make the invocation at a Rotary meeting, which we do, and because of the three faiths, we would have Catholic, Jew, the Jewish faith, a Protestant minister, the Salvation Army minister. We've never had one of the Muslim faith, although we do have members of the Muslim faith. We've never had a minister of the Muslim faith. So they took turns in the chaplain committee to give the invocation. And I probably shouldn't be saying this, not that it's bad, but the Protestants make an invocation of about 2 or 3 minutes or 4 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Blessing everything in sight and everybody, and they go on and on and on and on and on. Sidney Berkowitz would get up and make an invocation of one sentence.
Uh-huh.
And very thought-provoking sentences. I'm trying to remember one while I'm talking to you, but it's hard to concentrate on trying to remember a line, and I know something else. When my first daughter was married, I asked Sidney to make me a toast.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote the toast for me.
Uh-huh.
So that I could give it at my daughter's wedding, our first wedding in the family. And it was two sentences.
Uh-huh.
No, gone and on and on and on. None of this baloney. He went right to the point.
Uh-huh.
And what was that one that I liked so much was the fact that has to do with us having what we want. Wanting what you have, not having what you want. Being that you should be desirous of what you already have instead of being desirous of other wants. In one sentence. And to this day, when we have a minister get up in the Rotary Club and we'll make an invocation of 2 or 3 minutes, we look at each other and say, Sidney Berkowitz, where are you? So even to this day, because of his succinctness and brevity and still thought-provoking invocation,
mm-hmm.
he still remembered.
Along with the Rotary, was he also involved with a number of other things within the community, or were you aware of anything else that...
No, because he was involved with this interfaith?
Council of Churches? Or?
Well, yeah, the Council of Churches, but also ecumenical.
Okay.
The ecumenical movement that began late. Well, we were in front of that ecumenical movement.
Uh-huh.
Or at least I thought I was, because we did a lot of work in churches. We did Jewish temples and Orthodox churches and
uh-huh.
and Byzantine churches, Catholic churches, and the various denominations of the Protestant religion, Methodism, and Baptism, Baptist. So you had to respect all these other religions. You should, anyway.
Uh-huh.
And it's just coming around to the fact that we're now all praying to one God, and why shouldn't we get together? But it was the Catholic Church that probably was the greatest one against that, because it was, you go into a Protestant church, you are demeaning yourself. I never thought that, but that was one of the things. I'm trying to think of that. I may have worked with a horse show with him. I think my principal dealings would have been in some way related to the Rotary Club, because the Rotary Club would be involved in crippled children, going to, at that time we used to take crippled children to the Canfield Fair,
uh-huh.
take crippled children to Stanbaugh Auditorium to see the firemen show. We took them there for a Christmas show. But our principal, until just a few years ago, was the Youngstown Charity Horse Show, and that was a 5-day event, and most of the Rotarians would at some time be involved out there. And those, I think, were the only ones. No, I can't think of any other, because if it was a social event, it would have been involved with Rotary.
Uh-huh.
No, I can't think of anything outside of Rotary in which we participated, unless it was work-related.
Uh-huh.
I mean by that, they wanted something done, and we were the subcontractor who could do the job.
Uh-huh. Okay, is there anything we haven't really touched on that you think we need to add, or?
No, the other thing I could think about was the fact that Sidney was such a outstanding president of the Youngstown Rotary Club,
uh-huh.
that they made him a Paul Harris Fellow very quickly.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was a tribute to his persona, that you just knew that he was going to do a good job. You just knew that when he was given something to do, he would do it. And that, as you may well know, is not always true.
Uh-huh.
There are so many that aspire to be leaders, that when they become leaders, they then find other ways to have somebody else try to do their duties for them. I don't think that was Sidney.
Uh-huh.
So no, I can say that I enjoyed him.
Uh-huh.
I liked him. I enjoyed him. I enjoyed his fellowship, his friendship. And as I say, sometimes at Rotary now, when we have one of those long-winded invocations, we look at what, particularly at the three of the four fellows that's named, I just named, we look at each other, we say, oh, Sidney Berkowitz, where are you?
Mm.
Because he was good at that.
Mm-hmm. Just one quick thing.
Sure.
Could you describe that honor that was bestowed on?
Oh, Paul Harris Fellow,
huh?
Oh, yes, it's a... It's the, at the moment, I think it's the highest honor that's awarded by the Rotary Club,
uh-huh,
International. It is achieved by making a donation to the Rotary International for the sum of $1,000. And it was devised as a means of honoring Paul Harris, who is the founder of Rotary, who was its first president. And usually a club will make a donation in that person's name, and then they are given this honor. It's a medal, and it's something that Rotarians, at least, find it quite desirable.
Uh-huh.
It's a way of honoring people for past service, for outstanding leadership, and as I say, when Sidney was giving that, just right after, whether he was giving it while he was still president or maybe just right afterwards, I'm kind of leery on that because we're going back now to 74, 75, which is quite some time ago. But I do recall that he was made a Paul Harris Fellow very, very quickly, and as I say, it was in tribute to his great year as president, which I thought was very nice.
Okay, well, I thank you very much for your time, and
it's gonna happen now is a.